Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
There's probably no more contentious time on the Chicago City Council than when aldermen reconsider ward boundaries. That happens every 10 years when the U.S. Census is complete. It's that time again, and aldermen who represent a growing population are demanding that their representation reflect that. This weekend, we'll talk with a leading player in this upcoming debate, the head of the Chicago City Council's Latino Caucus. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest this week is 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas. He has been on the City Council since 2015, and he chairs the Council's Latino Caucus. He also chairs the Council's Veterans Caucus. He's a U.S. Marine vet who served tours in Operation Desert Storm and Desert Shield. Before he was elected to the Council, Villegas was chief of staff for the state's Capital Development Board. That's the agency that oversees new construction projects for state government. And he's been a champion at all levels for more Latinos and other minorities getting government contracts. But now he is spearheading efforts for more Latino representation on the Chicago City Council, and some aldermen might feel as if they are fighting for their political lives. We're conducting this interview via Zoom conferencing. I am at City Hall, and Alderman Villegas isn't. So, Gilbert Villegas, welcome.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you for that introduction.
Let's get right into it, because we do have a lot to talk about. At any level of elected government, redistricting is a most serious business. Let's face it, whoever draws the map really controls the fate of, in this case, the alder persons, or in other cases, state lawmakers or Congress throughout the area. So set up for us, explain the situation right now that is facing Chicago and the Chicago City Council.
Well, right now, just in August, we received the full census data from the federal government. As you know, there was a delay due to the pandemic, and so we're a little bit behind with the data. However, it was given to us in August, and right now, the city's team is reviewing the data, as well as the respective caucuses are reviewing the data to determine where the growth occurred. The good news is that the city and the state did not lose any population for the whole decade of 2010. We heard nothing but doomsday scenarios that everyone was leaving Chicago and leaving Illinois. So it was good to see that that did not occur. And the reason why it did not occur was can be attributed to the fact that Latinos decided to make Illinois and, quite frankly, Chicago, their home. So right now we're in the process of looking at the data to determine where the growth occurred with our consultant, and then we will actually begin to independently go into the map rooms to kind of look at what your current map looks like, and then look at where the growth occurred to begin to map for the next decade. And Craig, just so you know, this map that we're going to draw now will be in existence until 2035. So it's important to not just look at the current snapshot of the census, but take into account the trend in the way that the population is growing. And I say that meaning that, for example, in my area, I have a couple of precincts that were in 2010 at 22%, 23% Hispanic. But here in 2020, they're at 41, which would signal that the trend is that more Latinos are moving northwest because of the gentrification that's been occurring in the city of Chicago.
And overall, Latinos have been the fastest growing ethnic or racial group in Chicago for some time now, I believe. And right now make up about 30% of the city's population, right?
That is correct. I mean, when you take a look at, there's just a lot of factors that there, I mean, had it not been for the Latino growth, we would be looking at losing another congressional seat. So that means that that's another voice in Washington, D.C., making sure that Illinois, it's getting its fair share of resources. I mean, when you look at the federal level right now, we are actually a donor state. And so Congress, and it's important that we have enough of a population in order to ensure that we have enough congressional seats. So that way, when the appropriation occurs, we're just making sure that the state of Illinois is getting its fair share.
And I think it's important to stress for our listeners that when we are talking about population, a lot of federal aid, frankly, a lot of almost any kind of aid is keyed upon how many people are in an area. So that is vital to the future of the city and the future of a number of areas, and education especially too.
Absolutely.
There's a deep dive going on about the numbers right now, but at first blush, what kind of things are you seeing when you look at the big picture and the overall data?
Well, at first glance, it's, you know, again, good news that Chicago did not lose any population and actually gained population. You're also seeing that the central area of the city, downtown, has seen a huge uptick in population. The northwest and southwest sides have grown a little bit. But what's glaring is that the south and west sides of the city have seen a huge population decrease. And that's concerning because, I mean, the bottom line is that we want to make sure that the whole city as a whole is growing and not just certain areas of the city.
And therein lies the issue for the city council redrawing its map. Because there, you know, if you squeeze the balloon or if you make the balloon bigger in one part, that means it's getting squeezed somewhere else. And it sounds as if, frankly, predominantly African-American wards have been seeing the exodus. That means something when it comes to drawing a map and drawing the ward boundaries, right?
Yeah, I would say, you know, you've seen over the last two decades, approximately 280,000 African-Americans leave Chicago. It could be for the South suburbs. It could be for maybe they're retiring and deciding to retire elsewhere. But that's a big number, 280,000. And as you stated earlier, the federal dollars that are attached to people through the census, that's a huge amount of money that has left Chicago. And so there is going to be the reapportionment that's required every 10 years. And I think that as long as everyone can come to the table willing to negotiate and compromise, I think that it's not going to be a bad as process as everyone's painting it out to be. I think that there has to be an acceptance of what the data is, really, quite frankly. I mean, the data dictates that, the legislation, according to redistricting, requires us every 10 years to reapportion the wards as equally as possible based on population. And so the data is going to show what the numbers are. And then from there, we'll take a look at reapportioning the wards accordingly. The Voting Rights Act also comes into play as well because of the fact that African-American and Latinos and also Asians are also covered under the Voting Rights Act. That is going to be another factor that, quite frankly, the attorneys will have to try to figure out as we begin these discussions. But just like in any type of negotiations, you have to have willing participants on both sides in order to get things done. If any one party is dug in and not willing to compromise, then there lies the issue where it can become a lot more contentious and quite frankly cost the city millions of dollars through the if we have to go to referendum.
Yeah, and now I think I'm correct that you haven't been through one of these before, right?
No, that's correct. I was always a bystander and an observer, but as fate would have it, I find myself right in the thick of it. And I think that against someone who understands and contract negotiations and business, I think that I'm at the right place at the right time, because I think that we're going to need all participants willing to negotiate and come and compromise in order to get something done, which is required every decade.
But let me ask you flat out: do you expect that there is going to be that? I was around for the last one, and you know, back in the day, as they say, you could count on African American and Latino communities to support each other's goals. But first, I think maybe in general, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that dynamic has changed a bit on some issues. But also, if we're talking about a reapportionment, that means some representation is going to have to change, and that means that there may be fewer African-American aldermen in the city council if that reapportionment goes according to the numbers, right?
I think, well, let me address the first issue as it relates to African-American and Latino working together. I think that there are a lot of issues that are similar and not foreign to both communities. And so we definitely have to find ways, especially right now where 32 of the 50 members of the city council are African-American and Latino, 32 out of the 50. So which means that right now, a lot of discussions should be had by our respective caucuses as to what are the issues plaguing our communities. And as a budget appropriator, what are we doing to ensure that these our communities have the proper resources to combat the issues that are plaguing our communities? Unfortunately, we haven't had those discussions because a lot of times the budget process, the legislative process are not being led by the legislators. And so that's something that has been going on for decades. So this is nothing new. So I think that with the newer members that are coming on board, you're starting to see a lot more eagerness by the new legislators to actually legislate and not just deal with city services, dealing with potholes and tree trimming, but dealing with the bigger issues, the appropriation of ARP money. Legislation around business, legislation around public safety. I think those are things that historically have not been done to the frequency you're seeing now by legislators, by aldermen that you're seeing now.
Are you basically suggesting that it's being done from the top down? It's being done from the fifth floor?
Well, and that's been going on for years. Yeah. I mean, the fact that the city council members who are the budgeteers, the appropriators, don't put forward their own budget, but really just accept whatever the mayor's budget has been a problem, because that does not occur in the General Assembly, Congress, and there has to be that check and balance when we're talking about the appropriation portion. So I think that that's something that unfortunately just hasn't been something that aldermen have historically done. But you're starting to see a lot more of the younger, newer members asking those questions and really putting forward legislation that talks to that. And again, 32 of the 50 aldermen, that means that quite frankly, if there was an agreement on something, we could pass something that we both agreed on, because you need 26 to pass something. So I think there's a ton of work to be done on that. But as I stated before, there are a lot of common issues facing our communities. We just have to work together to address them. On your comments about reapportionment and potentially the African-American community losing representation, I think that that's going to be something they're obviously working on. They're working on drawing concept maps that will have to get support from city council members. And as I stated before, the African-American community, the Latino community, and the Asian community are all covered under the Voting Rights Act. So just because they're a conceptual map and get approval, they still have to meet the legal process. So those are things that I think if everyone comes in willing to negotiate and compromise and look at the data and the reality, I think that we can get to a point where we can get the aldermanic awards, the required votes to pass. Is everybody going to be happy? No, but that's compromise. I mean, when you leave a negotiation, every side has not gotten what they wanted, but they've gotten or received the majority of what they were looking for.
Have you had any contact with your counterparts among the Black Caucus that suggests that you are going to be able to sit down and work some of this out?
Yeah, so there is, there's some initial discussions. I mean, as I stated, the data's coming in and everyone's taking a look at it, making sure that we're looking at the same data, making sure that we can agree on what the actual number will be. Because even though the state statute says that we have to reapportion our wards equally, it does allow for a standard deviation to be into consideration when talking about growing minority wards. And in the statute, it allows for a maximum of 10% per the statute, but legally attorneys are saying that you wanna have as minimal standard deviation as possible in order to ensure if a lawsuit were to come forward, the lower the standard deviation, the better chance that the map survives and could be defended.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. My guest is 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas, who chairs the Chicago City Council Latino Caucus, and we are talking via Zoom. Where, if there is a redrawing of lines, where do you think the Latino populations are that could help swing a ward, whether they're, and especially when we're talking about the Northwest side, the wards that are not majority or substantial minority are white and or predominantly white. Where do you see wards swinging and that growth being captured?
I think when you look at the heat map of the population, in the way that we have it broken down by colors, you'll see that on the northwest side and the southwest side is where potentially there could be a gain or two. Again, the data is going to really dictate how that goes out. And then let's not forget about politics, Craig. So I think that quite frankly, if we were going by data, it'd be a lot easier. When you take a look at states like Arizona, where there's a commission that just does it blindly, you've seen the Latino community win in Arizona. They're talking about 3 congressional seats in Arizona that would have heavy influence Latino populations. It's when, in the General Assembly, they're looking, you know, the General Assembly draws the maps. But then that's when you get into the issue of, and MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense Education Fund, is challenging the state's map because they feel that the population, the growth in Latino population is not reflective of the representation. So I think with all of that, I see, you know, the data is demonstrating and showing that the Northwest and the Southwest sites are where we could potentially capture majority seats, however, probably in the 60%, 65% Latino population.
And I recall in 2010, we had various caucuses with various maps. The Latino caucus was smaller then, but had a map. The Black caucus, of course, had one. We even had back in those days a gray caucus, which was the older white guys who got together with their own caucus. So fun is ahead. I do want to turn to another topic that has been something that you've been very concerned about, and that was the number of Latinos in city leadership and in decision-making positions within this administration, and to be fair, within past administrations, that there haven't been as many. Now, I am compelled to point out that since this issue was raised, you raised it, Mayor Lightfoot, her last three big appointments, I believe, have been people from the Latino community. Corporation Counsel Celia Meza, Chief Procurement Officer Eileen Velazquez, and Public Schools CEO Pedro Martinez. You and others have been criticizing a lack of Latinos among top officials in the Lightfoot administration. So how you like her now? As the saying goes.
It's perfect timing because the two appointments recently in Mr. Martinez and Ms. Velazquez are happening during Hispanic Heritage Month, which are good. We can highlight that and celebrate that. But I'm Hispanic 365 days a year. So I'm constantly advocating for the Latino community every day. And so that's something that we've been advocating as a caucus for every day as well. And we're at the halfway point, a little bit past the halfway point of this administration. To have three commissioners out of 30 is a problem, especially when the data based on the census is demonstrating that we're at the 30% level. Now, all I'm asking for is a goal, a plan of some sort, Hispanic employment plan, that would try to get to parity, try to get to a point where it's reflective. You know, the aldermen legislate and appropriate a multi-billion dollar budget on an annual basis. And through that appropriation process, communities, programs are funded, communities are receive resources. And I think it's only fitting that when you have almost a third of the city, that those decisions that are being made through the budget process reflect the communities that they're serving to ensure that the communities are getting it's an equitable amount of the billions of dollars that are being appropriated. And that's something that I've did under the previous mayor, under Mayor Emanuel, and I'm gonna continue to do under this administration until the point when I don't have to do it anymore, Craig, and people realize that it's good to have different folks at the table, whether it be African-American, Latino, Asian, because we get different ideas and we get different, we hear different stories on people's upbringing. And I think that's important, especially when we're talking about policy and appropriation.
And isn't the problem, you know, deeper than even having the commissioners? It's about the advisors, the people, as you said, who are at the table drawing up the plans. So it maybe has to go even deeper than the person who's sitting in the big chair.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, quite frankly, we have a little bit, more say over approving or not approving the commissioners versus the cabinets of the executive branch. So the executive branch, they can pick whoever they want and really without any approval from the city. Where we come into play is on the commissioner portion, where there is an approval process from the alderman. And if I have to approve an appointment and I keep seeing no Latinos being represented, then I have to say something. I mean, I am elected by my community to represent my community. And it's I think they would welcome the fact that I'm asking questions about parity and diversity, because that's the right thing to do. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to work with the administration when I can. And if we don't agree, then it's my job to challenge them as well.
Can I ask also, just an extension of this, how satisfied are you with the contracting end of it, about the people, the business people out in the community who are Latino, who are getting contracts?
So when we talk about contracts, we're going to talk about two types of contracts. So we're going to talk about low bid contracts, which are the lowest responsible bidder, which is required by state statute, where there's an advertisement of a project or a product. People submit bids, and then really it's blind. It's like we want to see who's the lowest responsible bidder. And that's at the prime level. However, there are requirements for minority and women participation. So it's important that if the Latino community is not acting as a prime, that they're also viewed, or at least viewed in the subcontractor role. And so that's something that we're pushing for. Those are related to low bid. So really, if our community is submitting lowest bids, then we'll be visible on the projects. On the professional services side, sometimes those are negotiated. And I think that there's a little bit more subjectivity there. And I think that's where we want to make sure that our community is also participating. And I can tell you that right now on the engineering side of the submittals, and at the airport, that some of the projects there, and some of the teams do not have Latinos in key roles, and actually have them in the subcontracting role on the professional service side of it. So that is alarming to me. It's a multi-billion dollar project. That contract, when it got passed in 2018, received unanimous support, which means that Latino caucus members voted on this. And so we want to see participation, not just as subs, but at the prime level.
And I think another extension of this has to be considered what kind of programs you see coming from the administration. Are there areas where you want to see more action? You talked about the kind of budget decisions being made. Is it in community development? Is it in healthcare, education?
No, absolutely. Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, I think the initiative that this administration put forward, and I supported, the Invest Southwest initiative of investing in communities that have not seen investments in quite some time. I think it's a good first step, but I think it's time to move on to a 2.0 version as well, and begin to take a look at incorporating other communities, specifically the Latino community, because the Invest Southwest communities that were identified had zero Latino communities. I mean, it has Humboldt Park, but where the work is occurring is not occurring in Humboldt Park, where the Latino community is existent. And it is occurring very minimal. And so I want to make sure that as this Invest Southwest project is in its second year or year and a half of existence already, I think it's time to start talking about the 2.0 version of a community program like that for investments, and start shoring up some of these corridors within other communities as well.
Believe it or not, I have a lot more I wanted to ask you, but we are out of time. Thank you, Alderman Gilbert Viejas, the chair of the Chicago City Council Caucus. Thanks for spending the time with us. To our listeners.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it.
It was very, we'll have to talk again. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcast on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 WBBM.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.